Blog Talk Radio.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2,
check ignition,
1.
And may God's love lift be off. With you.
Now it's time
Good evening, America. Welcome back to California Bail Reform 2018. This is Carlos Montenegro. I'm a California bail agent living and working in the city of Los Angeles, and I'm also the chairman of the American Bail Agents Union. Welcome. It's Friday night once again, and we're back for our regular weekly show here tonight. Today's topic will be the California Bail Reform 2018, and we're going to talk about the In re Humphrey case. Now, on Thursday, January 25th, 2018, a state appeals court in California cast doubt on the constitutionality of bail system in California, saying the common practice of setting cash amounts so high that a suspect can't afford them is justified only for those who are too dangerous to release before trial. The court's ruling could change the state's approach to bail. In re Humphrey is a case where the appellate court argues that courts must take into account a person's ability to pay bail because otherwise poor people are being discriminated against in the money bail system. The appellate court also suggested that trial courts consider non-money bail conditions of release, such as the GPS monitoring or residential rehabilitation. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to talk about this very, very controversial topic of bail reform. And as we approach the end of this year and we come to a conclusion of the fate of the California bail bond industry, we are left to ponder about the different means of ways to save the bail industry and how we can come to a happy medium where we incorporate some of the traditional orthodox reformist point of view, and we also take in consideration the traditional bail agency owner point of view and see if we can come up with something that's wonderful and that's affordable for everybody. And at any rate, this is a beautiful world that we live in. We'll be right back, and when we come right back, we'll be right back talking again with our co-host, Greta Curtis, our legal analyst, and also the owner of Boss Bail Bonds. Thank you for attending tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back.
Wonderful people everywhere, the way they come.
Welcome back, America. This is Carlos Montenegro, licensed California bail agent. Welcome back to California Bail Reform 2018. Tonight's show topic is called In Re Humphrey Case Brings New Changes to Bail. And tonight, I'd like to welcome back our co-host, Greta Curtis, legal analyst and owner of Boss Bail Bonds. Welcome back, Ms. Curtis. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. How are you, Carlos? Thanks for having me on also.
Oh, great. Well, you know, it's always a pleasure, and it's always great to do a good show with you. And, well, tonight we have this show called In Re Humphrey Case Brings New Changes to Bail, and I know you know a lot about this. So for all those people out there that are unsure about this case and about some of the alternative forms of sentencing that are out there, we're going to talk a little bit about GPS tonight, as well as the case in itself and what it means to you, what it means to me, what it means to the bail industry in California, and what it means to America. Ms. Curtis?
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned some things earlier. I think the first thing that you mentioned about the Emory Humphrey case was that it basically was a microscopic viewpoint of the current bail system. And the Court of Appeals was right. Basically, what they looked at was the current bail system, the way it's set up. It basically is geared towards the rich. If you're rich and affluent, you have the ability to post the bail, you get out. If you don't, you stay in. However, that's not what the law is. That's not what our U.S. Supreme Court has said in interpreting the Eighth Amendment, and also in interpreting or in actually setting out the guidelines for bail. Our U.S. Supreme Court has said that you have to look at the individual's ability to pay. You can't just set an arbitrary amount, or as we have here in California, or I've heard you make reference to a statutory amount, and it's really not statutory. It's a judge-made amount. If you know anything about the bail-setting process, the Superior Court judges are the ones in the state of California are the ones that get together and decide what amount of bail will be appropriate for the different charges. And so we have basically an inflexible bail schedule, meaning our bail schedule here in Los Angeles, it's set very high. There's no deviation. But the In Re Humphrey case also said, the Court of Appeals also said that the judges aren't doing their job, that the judges must take into consideration the individual's ability to pay, their assets, their resources, and setting the amount of bail. So if you start out with $1 million bail and the defendant has only $25,000 in assets, there's no way he'd ever be able to make that bail. And it's the equivalent of having no bail at all. So that's what really In Re Humphrey stands for, is the proposition that our courts have to start doing their job. They can't just set a bail schedule amount and that's that, and we go by it. And, you know, if you could post the bail, fine. If you can't, you got to go for the long ride. And they also did look at something that we all know, is that if you're incarcerated pretrial, you're charged with a crime, and if you can't make the bail and the prosecutor offers you some type of deal, which is really not a deal at all, basically they're offering you the opportunity to plead guilty to a lesser offense, possibly, for less time, or the same offense with some time spent. And so it's used as a coercive device. That was one of the other findings of the Court of Appeals, that it was used as a coercive device, where you have people that take deals because they want to get out, they want to get home to their family, they want to get on with their life, they want some type of finality to the situation. Whereas with, if you got out on bail, you wouldn't have that kind of pressure. You could go back to work, you could take care of your kids. You know, you can make your house note, you can keep your car, you can keep your life. But with these, with the bail schedule the way it is now, if you can't make that bail, for the average working person, it's really a hard deal. It's really a hard, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. If you take the deal and you get credit for time spent already in jail pretrial, or you get out and, or you stay in. You don't get out. You wait 3-4 years. We've had cases where individuals have been in jail for 4 years. They really don't even know what they're charged with. And that's another thing. There's a big misconception that the prosecutor, as well as the public defenders, most people have public defenders, are doing their jobs, and they're not. I've had I represented an individual defendant in a case where he had co-defendants, and the co-defendants entered guilty pleas for lesser offenses, but they never saw the evidence. They never saw the evidence. The public defenders never showed them the evidence. So, criminal cases are the criminal justice system is big business. It's a $1 trillion industry. It's a $1 trillion industry, and a lot of people have a lot invested in this. And so I don't know if bail reform is really the thing here. I think we need to reform our whole system, our criminal justice system, because what we have here is not a situation where we're looking for truth and we're trying to find out what really happened. What we have is a situation where somebody's got to pay for it. It doesn't matter if it's the right guy or the wrong guy, but somebody's got to pay. And we have this this pervasive fear in our communities of people, of each other. And that means the mentally ill, that means the people with the drug addictions, drug problems, that means the felon that's gone to jail, or the person that's gone to jail, done some time, come out, he's a felon now, he can't get a job, so he goes back to what he used to do, stealing and robbing. So it's a vicious cycle, and we really need to stop and look at what's going on. But we have had a little daylight with Prop 47. Prop 47 allows the individual to clean their record up, or to have a felony reduced to a misdemeanor, so that they can get a job. Because if you think about it, we have a big underclass of people that have not been able to find gainful employment, or they find it and they can't keep it because of that one question on the application: have you ever been convicted of a felony? And so the person has to make a decision. Do I lie, get the job, feed my family, or do I tell the truth and get passed over? So you really have to look at things realistically and in a mature way.
It is sad. You know, it's unfortunate like that, too. I happened to be in a court yesterday, I went to do a surrender yesterday. And while I was doing a surrender there, there was a gentleman that was, in county jail, and he had obviously been, many times in front of a judge. So the judge, you know, was a pretty understanding judge, but she just basically turned around to him and just said, she's like, you know, Mr. X, Y, and Z. She said, you know what? She goes, I got to tell you, this is your absolute last chance. She goes, because the next time you're headed to state prison, mandatory time. And she said, if you ever get caught in anything, she goes, I don't care how small the crime is or anything, you're going to state prison. And I thought to myself, well, you know, first I was like, well, damn, you know, she's really understanding. You know, she had me hooked into the belief, you know. I was like, well, you know, she's really doing you a favor, dog, you know. And then I was like, hold the heck up here for a second here. She said anything. So that means to me, here we are, this African American dude, and is growing up in South Central, obviously, and we know that there's, you know, he has this record. So now this African American dude is gonna go try to get a job. He can't get a job. She's like, I want you to do it like the rest of us in America. We have to go get a job. And I thought to say, well, where's the job at? You know.
She
you have to go
that?
Get a job. Yeah, she got to get a job like the rest of us. And I'm like, hold on a second. You know, I'm not trying to color code anything right here, but I'm like, it's mighty, you know, it's easier to go get a job somewhere else.
Right.
She didn't grow up in South Central.
And
nor are her kids growing up in South Central. And unfortunately, you know, even when you go apply for a job and you say, first of all, you say African American, you know, it's like, okay, that's cool, you know, whatever. But you say you're from South Central, whoop, automatically. Hey, do you know? Did you know Tupac? What about you know, blah blah blah? Did you grow up in the Jordan Down? You know, what project are you from, homeboy? So you know what I mean. So there's just all this stigma attached to it, and even though it's a stigma attached to it already. So where is this man, this young man? He's probably about 28 years old. Yeah, she said he had three kids. Where is he going to go find a job? or where is he going to go to not even be around a circle of friends that are not going to get in trouble, where he might get picked up? Or where is he going to go outside of, if you know, where is he going to go that he's not going to be racially profiled
right.
by law enforcement, because he's already known, and they'll pick people up? What's the chance of that guy, you know, not going to stay in prison? I wanted to tell him at the end, I wanted to stand up and say, hold on a second here. Why doesn't he just do time serve and just go right on to state prison and just do like a credit service here? Because homeboy is going to state prison. Okay. And she was a nice judge, but I was like, damn, you know, it just seems so out of order, you know? And I thought to myself, this is not going to work. It's just not going to work. We do need drastic change. And then with this, in Ray Humphrey case, there's some options now that are happening in the courts. And, you know, what are some of those options, Ms. Curtis, that they're saying, you know, like, and why are the bail agencies like in so afraid of this, you know, in Ray Humphrey case and a suggestion about GPS monitoring or residential rehabilitation? What's going on there? Can you give us some insight?
Well, in my opinion, I believe the big problem is with the leadership. No one has sat down and said, hey, look, okay, we have the highest rate of incarceration and recidivism in the nation and the world, if you will. And a lot of our problems stem from alcoholism, drug addiction, and mental illness. And they don't have to be in the same exact order. It could be a mixture of all three. Okay, and racism. Let's not forget that. We have that too, because we have not matured as a country. You know, it's funny, you hear people talking about, you know, racism. Some people feel like, well, oh, that's over with. No, it's not. If you've never been in a black skin, you don't know anything about racism. If you've never been in a brown skin, you don't know anything about racism. It's funny. I had a student living with me for 3 years, going to high school from China. And he graduated. He was graduating from high school, and he was applying to different schools. He did not apply to any school here in the United States. His first choice was Canada. Second choice was the Netherlands. And I'm like, the Netherlands, of all these cold places, you know. But he told me, he said, this country is racist. It doesn't want to change. He said, I don't want to live here. So if an outsider and a kid, I mean, he wasn't even 18 yet. If an outsider can come here and grasp that and see what's going on. And then, you know, he's considered, considered a Caucasian because he's not black. But he had to experience some type of racism and disparate treatment to the extreme where he did not want to attend one of our finer universities. He could have gotten Harvard. He could have gotten Yale. But he didn't. He chose to go somewhere else because we have a problem. And it's like the elephant in the room. Nobody wants to look at it. Nobody wants to really talk about it. And like you said, this judge, her kids don't, she doesn't live in South Central. Her kids don't go to schools in South Central. You know, she's never had to walk down the street and make a decision of whether to join the gang or die. She's never been faced with that. So you're also talking about privilege and class. Because if you've had privilege and you're of a certain socioeconomic class, you don't encounter these things. I have a cousin that's visiting with me now. She was raised in Altadena. Her mother worked for American Airlines. They were the black people that made it. That's where the black people moved in the 60s when you made it, whatever making it is. My family, my mother, my father, they opted to stay in the city because my mother said they didn't have sidewalks up there. So we stayed in the city. And another aunt, she and her children, they lived in another suburb. They lived in Pomona. But they had an underlying joke that we didn't know anything about until we got a little older. But they called my sister and I city urchins and ghetto girls because we lived in the city. And so my cousin that's with me now, she's been through a lot. She's been a streetwalker. drug addict, the alcoholic right now. She has about six kids, two of them, well, she's had six children, two have died. And that's because she said she wanted, and she's been to prison. And she said she wanted to know what was going on because she's had my brothers, some of my brothers have gone to prison, and she wanted to know what her cousins were doing and what this was about. So until you really have walked in the shoes of the other guy, you really can't judge them, and you can't tell them how to live this life. It's the your experience yesterday was, okay, she hooked you in. You know, she's the soft-hearted, motherly, kind judge. But then she said something that was just so out of whack with the situation, it blew your mind. It really blew your mind. It would have blown mine. And then the killing part, when you were talking about it, this experience you had, all I could see is her giving up on this kid. And that's a hell of a thing for us to do, to give up on each other. People
yep,
can
sure
change.
Is.
People can change. People can change. Given the opportunity, people can change. But
yes.
She gave up on him. She gave up on him. She threw him away. She said, you come in here one more time, I'm throwing you away.
Sad.
For that young man, yeah, for that young man, I know that was hard to digest, you know, because on the one hand, she's telling him how much she cares about him and she wants him to succeed and she wants him to do better and he could, you know, he can make it, blah, 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 blah. Then on the other hand, but if you come in here again, I'm throwing you away. I'll feed you to the dogs. I mean, you know, that's heavy. That's a big dichotomy. How do you reconcile that? How do you reconcile that? And you're the judge. She should have been waving her gavel and pulling up some type of employment organization, pointing him that way, pointing to the job. Okay? Where are these organizations that hire felons, ex-felons? They're not even ex-felons. A felony is just a definition of the conviction, but they've made that the person's name. It's like that movie where the lady, she was, it was back in the days of the Salem witch hunt, and they made her wear an A on her forehead because she had committed adultery. You know, same thing. It's a branding. It's a tattoo. And it's not a tattoo of choosing. And he might have whatever is on his record might be there because he just couldn't sit in the cage. He couldn't sit in the jail. My grandfather always said, jails are not for people. Cages are for animals, not for people. And the animal can't stand to be in the cage too long. I do a little denning. My dog is going through it now because of the fireworks and shooting guns and everything. You know, she likes to get in a little cubby hole and where she feels secure because it's small. But people aren't like that.
Yes.
And so for our system to throw that kid away, I don't care what he did. You know, to throw him away. To tell him, you come in here again, I'm throwing you away. that's mean. That's ugly. Especially after she confidenced him into believing she really had his best interest at heart.
Right. Well, yeah, that is just one story of many, obviously, that you've seen like that, and myself also in court. Ms. Curtis, we're going to take a short break right now, but when we come back, I want to talk about the In re Humphrey case, about the GPS monitoring, and I also want to talk about this nonprofit that both you and I founded called Above Below Technology and what it's for and how it can be used to get people out of jail, you know, and give them an equality or just like an equal stand in this court fight. And also, not only it's good for, you know, for them to exercise their Eighth Amendment rights, but it's also good for the community, for safety too. So when we come back, we're gonna talk about that. And then maybe the last part of our show, I'd like to talk about the types of people that are being ignored by the bail community. And the reason why they're being ignored is just because really there's no way of really policing them or finding out where they're at if they take off on the run. That's a lot of money to be putting on a bail company to put out. So I understand why. But I know that with GPS monitoring, it gives a reason for the season, and it also will help these companies, to be able to help people that are indigent that they cannot afford bail in a regular sense, and other people too, homeless people, etc. Even though a lot of people say that's far fetched, that ain't going to happen in the bail industry. Let's really cut to the chase tonight. This is Carlos Montenegro, and we'll be right back. We're in California here, ladies and gentlemen, and we're just about ready to enter into a heat wave in California this week. Record-breaking temperatures. We'll be right back. This is Carlos Montenegro. Welcome back to California Bail Reform 2018. Tonight's show topic, In Re Humphrey case brings new changes to bail. GPS monitoring as an alternative to bail. Above Below Technology is a California nonprofit community organization founded in 2018 as an educational resource center exclusively focused on the public safety of the community and providing the courts with alternative conditions of pre-trial release and bail reform, supporting the constitutional rights and civil liberties of defendants. Our mission is to provide affordable bail solutions for the moderate, low-income, and indigent that historically have been denied their Eighth Amendment constitutional right of due process as a result of their socioeconomic status. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to talk about this In re Humphrey case. Welcome back, Ms. Curtis.
Hi, Carlos. While we were off the air, I was thinking about some of the things, some of the alternatives that were expressed in the In re Humphrey case. And one of them was definitely a lower bail amount. Mr. Humphrey did not get out immediately after this case was heard, but eventually he did. And it was actually got on an OR. OR is one of the alternatives. The In re Humphrey case actually talked about what Mr. Humphrey's plans were. Mr. Humphrey had agreed to go into a 24-hour, 30-day drug rehabilitation program. And the Court of Appeals felt that that was a very good alternative. And the reason why is because he would have had 24-hour supervision. He would have been away from the victim. He wouldn't have posed any type of threat to the community. He would have been getting treatment that he sorely needed to curtail his drug addiction, which led to him actually stealing $7 from his co-tenant in where he resided in an assisted living situation. And in addition to that, he would have, you know, made it to all of his court dates because they would have brought him. He had signed up for it. And the Court of Appeals just felt that the judge's reduction of a $600,000 bail to a $350,000 bail, you know, it was just ridiculous in light of the fact that here this man, he was 62 years old. He was on either GR or Social Security. So how could he ever afford that? And like his public defender said, you know, reducing it to $350,000, that's like no bail at all. Why, you know, why
right.
bother? You know, it's an exercise in futility. It's actually a waste of the taxpayers' dollars. It's a game, if you will. So the Court of Appeals felt that, you know, him going into that program that was wanting to or desiring to go and that he had willingly accepted responsibility for his drug issues, his drug problem, and he was going to try to do something about it, they felt that was good. And then, mind you, this is pre-trial. This is not after a conviction. This is pre-trial. So for people that have addictions, that have illnesses, the first part of the cure or the first step in curing or getting cured is to accept that you have a problem. And it's no different with drug addiction. It's no different with alcoholism. So the Court of Appeals felt that his agreement to go into that program was adequate for to meet the requirements to get him back to court, which is all bail is supposed to do. It's supposed to ensure that that defendant, if let out of jail, will appear for all their court appearances. And so the plan that Mr. Humphrey had in place perfectly met those with that criteria. He would have been there. Then the other thing was there was a restraining order. So they didn't have to worry about the safety of the alleged victim because he had a restraining order. Plus, he was going to be in a 24-hour facility for 30 days, 30, 60 days. So he would not have had access to that person. That person would not have been contacted or would not have been in fear of his life. And he posed no threat to anyone else. So the Court of Appeals felt, you know, hey, these are adequate. And if you think about it, you know, it would take a lot for an addict or, you know, for someone to sit through a program and to want to change their life or try to change their life, you know. So it wasn't jail, but is pretty close to it. You know, he still wouldn't have been able to get his drugs. He still wouldn't have been able to, you know, engage in the conduct that got him into jail. So they felt that, you know, the trial court just had not done its job. It had not looked at the extenuating circumstances and what and those were extenuating circumstances, and that's what you have in order to get a bail reduction or a change in the amount of the bail. You have to show extenuating circumstances. You have to show something's changed from the time you were arrested until that hearing. Something's changed or something's going to change afterward. But basically, the court just rubber stamped its own bail amount, and that's the problem. It's not the bail industry per se. It's the people that are setting the bail. They're out of touch. They're out of touch. It's like a vicious cycle. It's a circle. I talked to a prosecutor, I guess about 2 weeks ago. We did a bail motion, and this gentleman, he had a mental problem. He just got out of state prison. When he got out, they didn't give him enough medication, and they didn't help him connect to the resources that he would need to be successful once he got out. He was on parole. And so he went back to self-medicating. He did go and enroll in a couple of programs that were supposed to help him with his drug addiction. But in the meantime, he was self-medicating because they didn't give him any medication. So he ends up in a fight, a mutual combat with another gentleman, and he's the only one that goes to jail. The other guy doesn't because he got the worst end of the fight.
So wait, anyway, was there anything about what color was this individual?
Well, the gentleman that went to jail, he was black.
Oh, wow, that's a surprise.
And the person he had to fight with was white. Okay. So
wow.
Anyway,
okay. I just wanted to get it clear for the record here. Okay.
So he goes to jail. He's in there, and his parole officer wrote a letter saying he wasn't going to violate him he wasn't going to violate the parole because they blew it. They didn't give him the medication. They didn't hook him up. They didn't get him in contact with the correct support system, and it was their fault. And then I think one of the organizations that he had contacted, it was a mental health organization, they had indicated that he had contacted them. He'd enrolled in their program and everything, but he just, you know, the whatever medication he had been given in prison, by the time he got out and got started moving about in society, that stuff had worn off. So anyway, we did the bail mod and we filed it, and little did I know that his attorney, his private counsel, his attorney did not want him out. His attorney felt that he should stay in jail because he was going to do time, period. So, you know, it's a lot of factors that contributed to this, because if you look at it, here his counsel, the person that's his alter ego, is saying, well, I think I should stay in jail. Okay. And wait, this is a real kicker. And so I'm talking to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor's like, I have no problem with him getting out. I just think some bail should be posted, but I think he should be out because he has a mental problem. It's obvious. And this is the system stinks. He said it. The system stinks.
But the,
and
the
I hate
public
it.
Defender said stay in.
No, this was private, a private attorney, not the public defender.
A private attorney said to stay in.
His mother was paying this guy.
Damn.
The private attorney. So,
you know, like, wow.
I think we've gotten to a point where it's business as usual, rubber stamp it. You know, if you got arrested, it's because you did something. Doesn't matter what you did, but you should go do time. And that's just there's another throwaway. There's another throwaway, okay? That's another throwaway. His attorney threw him away. He paid this man to throw him away. So he ends up taking a plea. He took a plea. A year in state prison, which is really a year and a half. which is really a year and a half.
Wow.
And,
you know, it's a sad situation. We've had some other bail motion types of, you know, interactions too. Would you mind elaborating on a couple of those of what happened in those?
Well, I noticed there was one we
You're the one in Compton. You're the one in Compton where it was a $3 million bail, and everybody was saying, like, this is not going to happen. But how the judge went right down, he took 1 hour to go over the motion, and he was going to allow the gentleman out on a GPS monitor for $3 million bail. But the gentleman had, 16 failures to appear for traffic court, although he eventually went in. But that was so that judge really did live up to this, you know, In re Humphrey case.
No,
I
beg to differ.
Okay.
I don't agree. And the reason why I don't agree is because I sat there and I listened to the judge. And the judge put the burden on the wrong person.
Okay.
He put the burden on the defendant to prove he should be out, when it's really the prosecutor that has to prove the defendant should be in.
The people.
Yeah. So, he did a good job with his analysis, but he used the wrong – he flipped the script.
Right. In the end. Yeah, that was a cliffhanger right there. Let me tell you, I was – you know, that was a cliffhanger right there. And I – even the other attorneys were like, he's going to let this guy out on a GPS monitor for $3 million. And it doesn't make a difference how much it is. And that's what I want to get out there to everybody, that it really doesn't make a difference how much the bail is. Don't get discouraged. If you are in jail and you have a high bail, you have a right to have a bail reduction hearing. And if your attorney, whether it be private or public, is not hearing you when you say, I want a bail reduction hearing, then they are depriving you of your rights, correct?
That's right. Due process.
You know, due process. And also too, with all the publicity about this GPS monitoring or a combination of bail and GPS monitor low bail, you would think that more attorneys would be using the GPS monitor scenario, but they're not. That's one of the reasons why we formed it, so we could offer it to everybody for such a low cost. And even though it's being used, you would think that, you know, they would be a little bit more team player for their client. But you're right. By them being in jail, they make more money, correct?
Yes, exactly. You have to look at it this way. The attorney's only client is incarcerated. He can only call him sometimes, and it might be collect. The attorney's very busy. He has more than 5 of these types of cases, okay? He makes more money by that person staying in jail and him not having to get surprise visits from the person coming to the office or calling or any, you know, basically anything. It's a point of diminishing returns. If your client is out and about, running around doing their own investigating, you know, checking out things, calling things to your attention, that's going to run the bill up. And if you've already said, well, okay, it's going to cost you $15,000 for this case and you got your money up front and the guy's locked up and all you have to do is appear every now and then in court for like 5 or 10 minutes, you know, maybe 3 or 4 times, and then finally, you know, you say, well, I think you need to take this deal because he's been sitting on ice and he's suffering, you know, he's like, well, I got to do something. I either have to, you know, go to trial quickly, or I have to take a deal because I got to get out of here. It's to the attorney's advantage. It's to their advantage. And if you've got about 10 of those, it's a good payday. It's gravy.
Okay, the case we had about the attorney that got really, really mad that we were even going to suggest it to their client? And ended up with that client get like, I don't know, 300 something years in jail or something like that, even though that, you know, it would just seem weird, you know, to me that they were, you know, they were supposed to be representing, but since day one of the case that they didn't do nothing about, you know, even say, well, how about going to a rehabilitation center? You know what I mean? They didn't suggest any of that.
Well, Well, that case was really crazy because the family, I never talked to him, but I know the family was very much interested in him being on the GPS monitor. And we were moving along pretty good there. And then the next thing I know, you told me that this attorney called you and told you not to talk to the family anymore. Don't mention GPS monitor or bail reduction or anything to him. This guy had been sitting on ice for like 4 years.
Right. And also
not only that,
mm-hmm.
not only that, remember now, this guy had gone to trial previously and it ended up a hung jury. No, it was a mistrial.
But the same case.
The victim said that this person was not the person that did the crime.
Right. Stood up and said, don't put this man in jail. And that just went like, well, everybody said, like, okay, whatever, let's go next, right? They worked so hard to just put this man in jail. It was a really sad situation.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I want to talk with you a little about how this GPS monitor – okay, if there's somebody in jail and they want to get out on a GPS monitor using this In Re Humphrey case, there's a procedure they got to go through, and it's usually through a motion, correct?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. It's a motion is a document that's filed with the court that explains the law and how that law applies to this particular person's situation. And that the court should give them a hearing so that they can show they don't have the ability to post this, you know, this bail, and that they should, you know, there are other alternative, less restrictive means for the court to impose conditions to impose upon him to make sure he comes back to court. Because that's all bail is.
Mm-hmm.
Bail is just to ensure that person will reappear.
So one of the things about this AB technology or above below technology about this nonprofit that we formed for the community, Ms. Curtis, was the fact that we do something very, very different than most GPS monitoring companies. We're really actively involved with trying to get the individuals out either through low bail, no bail, or GPS monitor. So one of the things that we try to do is do these bail reduction hearings for them in these motions. I'd like to go over the steps and procedures. If you happen to have somebody that's being detained right now and their bail is really, really high, how AB technology can help them, and what are the steps that they need to do, and we'll go right down the steps. We'll be right back, Ms. Curtis, and then we'll go over all those steps.
Okay, great.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carlos Montenegro, licensed California bail agent, and I'm the chairman of the American Bail Agents Union. Here we are tonight with the owner of Boss Bail Bonds from Los Angeles, Greta Curtis, and also our legal analyst. Ms. Curtis, it's great to be here again tonight. And, you know, tonight's not as controversial as some of the other shows. And you know, I love a good controversy, but it could get real messy. But I'm just gonna be nice tonight. Let's just keep to the script right here. But anyways, let's do a role play thing right here, okay? About a scenario of somebody calling in for who would make somebody eligible for this, and what would we say here? For example, somebody would call in from jail, and if you're a bail agency. And they say, well, my bail is too high. Well, how's too high? Let's say $500,000. Oh, okay. Have you asked for a bail? Do you have any co-signers, et cetera? Do you have any property? No, I don't have property. I don't have this. I don't have that. Wow. You are in some serious problems. Good luck, and we'll see you later. Okay. That shouldn't be. That phone call shouldn't be, okay? The phone call should be, but it shouldn't just be, catch you on the other side, you don't qualify. And I'll tell you why. Now, for bail agencies that are out there that are doing that, you are doing yourself a disservice, okay? Because you are missing out on valuable bail right there. Bail. Mm-hmm. You could be making a lot of extra money, for your agency, okay? And I'm saying this, and I'm for the defendants and for the bail agencies. And how is that? Well, you can suggest to the individual that they have a bail reduction hearing. The bail rejection hearing, right, can be done through their private attorney, the public defender, or they can have a private party like our company, a nonprofit, AB Technology, do it for them. And then once the bail is reduced, then you could go ahead and, you know, already have them pre-signed up for the program, and then go ahead and write the bail when it's done. You know, let our company just go ahead and do that for you, and then you write the bail and take care of it. And or, you know, give people alternatives. You know, don't just have people hanging in there because they can't afford the bail or the bail's too high. At least lead them to the water so they can decide whether they want to drink it or not, right? So if somebody were to call you and they say, well, what are the requirements? How does this work? What do I need to do? Okay, I've got this $500,000 bail. What do I do? So what would you say, Ms. Curtis? What are the steps?
Well, first of all, we'd explain to them that normally what we do is we ask for a bail reduction as well as GPS monitoring. We believe that utilizing the combination of both things that will give the court more of an incentive to grant a lowering or reduction of the bail. If you just go for bail reduction or OR and not
on the fly,
on
the fly where they just walk in and they're
right.
Your Honor, I'm just here to see if you reduce the bail. That's on the fly. That's unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, you need to do a motion. You need to do some paperwork. You need to give the court something to think about, and as well as the prosecutor, the other side. You know, you need to make them put forth their best argument. And usually, you know, their argument is going to be something flimsy. They're going to try to try the case right there, which is not what it's about. You know, the court is entitled – or the court takes, which I think is not proper or appropriate, but the court takes all facts that are alleged in the complaint as true. Okay, fine, but that still doesn't come to that still doesn't basically determine who's going to come back to court and who's not going to come back to court if they're out on bail. If a person's going to flee, they're going to flee. You know, if they've got a $500,000 bail, they're able to make it, they're going to flee. Who is that guy? It's a director. I can't think of his name. Polsky. Is it Polsky? No, I can't think of the guy's name. But he raped a 13-year-old girl 40 years ago, and he's never been back to California. He's all over the place. I can't think of his name, but it'll come to me in a minute. But, you know, if you're going to flee, you're going to flee. And so,
right, you're gonna flee, right? If you're gonna cut it off, you're gonna cut it off,
right?
No matter what.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, even in jail, they might get out of jail, they might flee from jail, they might break out. I mean, who's to say? People do desperate things in desperate times, but if you're pre-trial, and you know your bail is $2 or $3 million. and you only make $25,000 a year, well, you know, you might as well, they just convicted you, really. They've already convicted you under the guise of a bail. You know, so the thing is, the first thing we would find out is if the person, you know, if they were agreeable to the GPS monitoring, because it can be invasive. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right, not everybody wants it.
Right, and we'd also inquire as to whether or not they had some type of medical problems, whether that's alcoholism, drug addiction, or some type of physical ailment or mental ailment or something of that nature. And we would bring that up as well, because the jail system is not in, the sheriffs aren't in the business of administering medication. So you have a lot of people that are in jail. Yeah, well, not even real rehabilitation, but medication, you know. A lot of people are in jail and they're not receiving their meds. It's like the guy I was talking about earlier, the defendant that whose attorney wanted him to stay in jail. He wasn't getting his medication. And that's cruel and unusual punishment. And you do have a right to bring a motion to ask the judge to order the jailer to provide you with your meds if you're not getting your medication as well. So there are a lot of things that people don't know. And it's not because the information is not there. It's just because they're not being told. You know, they don't want people to know what their rights are. If you know what your rights are, then you ask for what you're supposed to have. They don't want people to know they have a right to a bail reduction hearing, okay?
So you would recommend the bail reduction motion, right? And then you'd meet with the family, right? And I would go down there and have an interview, or someone of the agents would go interview the person to find out what's going on, to see about their past and everything, right? Okay.
Right, yes, because we need to know if that person has, you know, any type of failure to appear, if they've had a bail reduction motion before, what was the outcome, you know, if there's been a change of circumstances, you know, that would provide for, allow for us to even do that. But the N. Ray Humphrey case in and of itself, that's a change in circumstances that will warrant a bail reduction hearing. So, yeah, we need that. And then also we would need some type of commitment from the person. If we do the motion, we would need them to sign a contract saying that, you know, they are agreeable to the lease, because that's actually what you do. You lease the GPS monitor from us. You don't buy it.
Correct.
You lease it. And then also we would do the, for the bail, we would have a contract with them for the bail as well, because we want to show the court that they are serious and they are committed to do this, and it's not just a fly by night situation, and it's
right, serious.
Taken seriously. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Very serious. It's very serious.
Yeah. And even when going into like a rehab or something like that, if they have, you know, alcoholism issue, or if they're drug addicted to something, you know, them going into a facility, a inpatient facility, you know, we need to show. Not only show that, we need to, you know, it needs to be the, what is actually supposed to happen, or what actually is going to happen if given this opportunity, you know. So, you know, it's just a thing where it depends on the different situations and stuff, but that's where we start. And we get all of that together, and we put it in like a little booklet, and we follow with the court, and we get a court date, and we go in and have it heard.
Wow. Yeah, it's really interesting on some of these cases, and some of the sad stories. I mean, they call in all the time. For example, recently this woman just called in, and she asked, well, how long is it going to take, right? And I asked, well, how long have you been in jail for? She said 6.5 months, and I said, for what? She said, for stealing some, I don't know, some donuts or something out of a store. Something.
Wow.
Petty theft. And I thought to myself,
wow.
Oh, my God, I can't believe her bail is 100. Well, she had a past offense already on it, but her bail is like 100 and $40,000, I guess, with all the other things in it. But still, you know, she's missed, you know, she did work a regular job. Sometimes kleptomaniac people that steal, it's a disease.
That too.
You know,
yeah,
and so you're going to punish
that's
those
true.
Individuals and not give them counseling or therapy. That they, I mean, they have Kleptomaniac Anonymous, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's
right.
Why they have these things there. So, you know, it's not fair for them to remain there, but they have to go through the process. It's, and a lot of them call up and said, okay, I do qualify, hook me up, dog. You know, I'm like, well, that's cool, but you got to go in the court. It's a process, and that turns people off, and because they've been there already slammed
right.
in there for
Right.
1, 3, 6 months, something like four and a half years.
The court is a hostile place. This is a hostile place for a person in custody. It's very hostile. They're there. They can't wave at their loved ones. The loved ones can't wave at them. They can't talk. There's a sign up there that says if you do, you go to jail. But if you're out on bail, you could talk to your people. No.
Right.
So, there's some strange things going on there, you know. Really, really strange things. So, we do the background on them and everything, and work it out.
And they get hold of us through. They could call us at 1-833-7-TECHNO. That's TECHNO or 1-833-783-2466. If you have a loved one that is being detained and has such a high bail. And there's a lot of other, GPS monitoring companies out there. But, really, in reality, it's really only for the rich or those people that, that really have a lot of money, because it's like $300 and $400, $500, to get it per month.
Right.
And, basically we do also have a sliding scale too at our office for those that don't fit into every, they can't afford even that price. We have a sliding scale, so it is really made for the community, nonprofit, and it is also with the community safety, and the forefront of everything. And, so people can be protective members. I mean, if you're going to keep somebody in there for petty theft, but they belong in, kleptomaniac anonymous, classes,
mm-hmm.
That ain't cutting the mustard in there. And it's just going to get worse, because then they get together with other clever, petty theft individuals.
They learn
new tricks of the trade. So at any rate, so that's what's going on right here. But let's do some closing statements here. Anything in closing you'd like to say?
Oh, just thank you for the opportunity to come on and talk to you and try to impart some type of help or information to the public at large. And just that people should go sit in your courtrooms. They're your courtrooms. Go see what's going on. See what these judges are doing. See what these prosecutors are doing. See what these public defenders are doing, even private attorneys. Become active. We have to become active, and we have to hold our system accountable. We can't just stick our heads in the sand like ostriches and say, it's not going to happen to me and everything will be fine. But because as we see every day, it could be you. It could be you.
Right. It could be anybody. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite saying is, you don't have to stay in jail if you can't afford the high bail. Okay. Just remember that AB Technology can assist you in not only helping you apply for this bail reduction hearing to get your bail reduced and maybe affordable bail. It can also help you, get the GPS monitor. So for more information, call 1-833-7-TECHNO. TECHNO or 1-833-783-2466. And Above Below Technology Center is a California nonprofit community organization. Ms. Curtis, it's always great to talk with you. The stories, we could go on and on and on about our stories, about going to court with this. And believe me, it is not that common for bail companies or for other companies, nonprofits, to go in there to try to shoot for a bail reduction hearing. And sometimes the court looks at you sort of odd, like this is strange. But it's the defendant has a right to have that hearing and have the people represent who they really want. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So this is Carlos Montenegro and Ms. Curtis. Thank you very much for joining me again tonight. And we'll see you next Friday night at 8 p.m. on California Bail Reform 2018. Thank you, everybody, and have a great weekend. Bye.
Bye.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
It was 29.